From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here, you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employ to ensure career success, and the actions that they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience, and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. Today on the Tightrope Podcast, we present another of our Between the Seasons episodes, during which we will take a step or two back from the style and format of our seasonal episodes, but also explain to you the why of what we do. We will also get current with issues that affect people in the workplace seeking meaningful work, but also to shine a light on the work that we do on the Tightrope Podcast to make your journey to meaningful work both rewarding and successful. Coming up, we meet with Adrian Schock, founder of 5-to-1 Consulting, based in Washington, D.C. Adrian is an industry-recognized thought leader in the area of neurocentricity. Major corporations and nonprofits hire her to ensure that people in them work efficiently, mutually supported and respected. We talk to her about neurocentricity and empathetic recruiting, which are helping people to do meaningful work and by extension, change how people get hired. But before we get to our interview, we want to thank you for being a part of the Tightrope. We hope that you like the guests that we have featured and appreciate all the changes that we have made to our format that we hope will make your podcast experience a pleasurable yet informative one. One area where we could really use your help is in building our audience. If you enjoy the Tightrope Podcast, then we ask that you tell 5 friends about us. They can subscribe to us by keywording The Tightrope with Dan Smolin wherever they get podcasts. Our best promotional vehicle is you, and we truly appreciate all that you do and continue to do to help us to build our listenership. Thank you. We have just finished the first full week of 2020, and we hope that your new year has gotten off to a great start. As we mentioned in last week's episode, 16% of the American workforce is committed to finding new work in the new year. For people seeking meaningful work, oftentimes the bridge between a current meaningless job and a new meaningful one can be a difficult tightrope walk, but not an impossible one. If you are committed to finding new work in 2020, then we think you should seriously consider an internship. And let us just say this. Internships are not just for college students who are starting their careers. Internships provide phenomenal opportunities to people at all stages, even mid-career professionals seeking a career reboot, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do. Meaningful work. If you are interested in the growing fields of resource sustainability and clean tech, then we think that the Green Program is one program worthy of serious consideration. Their participants get hands-on experience that they can use to mitigate the world's most pressing issues in sustainable development, clean energy, and clean tech. You will travel internationally to one of several Green Program destinations like Iceland and Japan, and over 8 to 10 days, gain actionable skill and experience that can help you get hired by top companies that seek to make the world a better place. To learn more, including upcoming programs and fees, just click the Learn About the Green Program link posted at the bottom of our show notes for this episode, or find them on the web at thegreenprogram.com. And good luck to you. Our challenge on the Tightrope Podcast is to help people find and do meaningful work. But we also hope to poke the bear, to get thought leaders in business, academia, and public service to rethink the role of work in society so that people doing it are productive, earn a good living, and most of all, live their dreams. So thank you for walking the tightrope with us in 2020 and in the years to follow. Please let us know what you think of our podcast, offer up some story ideas and potential guests, or just say hello. Send us a tweet to @DanSmolin or pop us an email at info@dansmolin.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Here now, our conversation with Adrienne Schock of 5-to-1 Consulting. We met with her in July 2018 at her offices in Washington, D.C. So you've established considerable subject matter expertise in an area that you call neurocentricity. And I was wondering if you could share with our listeners what that is about.
Sure. So neurocentricity comes from neurocentric. And my former company was called Neurocentric Leadership Consulting. Neurocentricity is basically how I define the nervous system. The nervous system is what gets activated when we feel good, when we feel badly. It is our barometer in terms of how we experience and view the world. It's designed to keep us alive, it's designed to keep us safe, and it's designed to lift us to our highest heights. That's what neurocentricity is. It's the focus of the nervous system and the contribution it makes to our being and our ability to connect and our ability to influence or be influenced. It's all about the nervous system. The nervous system generates language. When I'm feeling upset, when I'm feeling disrespected, unsafe, what comes out of my mouth is very different than when I feel at ease, happy, and understood. I'm not making those decisions consciously, but I am emoting, my nervous system is emoting language. It's the nervous system that's the origin. This is my belief, this is how I see the world. Some may agree, some may not, but my experience is our nervous system is what emotes, it creates emotion, and it's the emotion that creates language.
Now, how does neurocentricity play out in a work environment, especially when people are applying for a job in an organization or are hiring people in an organization? How does neurocentricity play out in those kinds of dynamics?
If we look at this in the context of hiring, so there are many different contexts from which we can take a look at this. We can look at hiring, we can look at performance evaluation, we can look at succession planning. In order to really see what someone is capable of, we need to make sure that they are at ease in sharing their story with us. If I have somebody who's stressed, or if I have somebody who is way too relaxed, I'm going to get a version of that person that may or may not be aligned to what I actually get if I hire this person. So understanding the neurocentricity is about understanding how to keep this person, their nervous system, at ease, and how to keep my nervous system at ease. Because when we're both at ease, we see the world much more accurately, much more realistically. We don't have these filters that are keeping us from hearing what's coming out of somebody else's mouth. Like, oh my God, you know, oh, I hate that tie, or oh my gosh, I can't believe that person wore this to an interview. So there's all of this narrative that's happening in the mind of the interviewer and in the minds of the interviewee. So how can I keep this person at their absolute most comfortable level of ease to see what they're really about? And that holds true for performance evaluation. I mean, I've worked with people in many scenarios. I mean, I've seen a lot. I've been around for a long time. And I remember having conversations with HR to say, we don't even know what this guy is made of. He's so stressed out. There's a specific example between, you know, this guy's boss and performance. And I said, we don't even know what he's capable of. His boss is making him crazy.
Right.
So let's figure out it's so expensive to let people go. It's so expensive to you know, weed them out. I mean, if they're not a good fit, get them out as soon as possible. But if you don't even know, you got to figure it out.
So what you're describing here is optimal. It's the conditions that would optimize the relationship between, in this particular case, the hired talent and the hiring manager.
Sure.
So it's cohesive, it's open, It can withstand constructive criticism, but more importantly, it can grow both for both parties.
Yes, it has to happen in a state of balance. One of the things that I coach my clients all the time is there's an OODA line. OODA is a term that stemmed from the Army. It's orient, observe, and act.
I love military acronyms.
Oh, I have to get back to you. It escapes me. But basically, just draw a line. Where am I on this OODA line? Hmm. And the line itself, just sit down before any conversation, just draw that line out. Am I above the line? So the line is baseline balance. Am I hyped up? Am I excited? You know, or am I below the line? Am I feeling insecure? Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling stressed? And the bottom, the game is get yourself to that baseline of balance so that you can show up listening well, communicating well, and seeing what's actually going on. And if I don't go into a conversation knowing my state of being, it's going to be very difficult for me to influence you and get you to hear what I'm saying.
So let's play out the different ways that somebody could interact with a hiring manager. The old way, I'll call it transactional.
Mm-hmm.
I, as a recruiter, would come up with a list of candidates who check off all the boxes. Mm-hmm. Experience, education, training, and maybe some other things, maybe where they went to grad school, I'm not sure. So the person shows up, and if I do my job well and I peer into the person's soul and I can kind of get a sense of who they are and they're really good people, we get them through the interview process, and then we hope that the fit check works. And so 90 days into the job, it either works or it doesn't. And maybe it doesn't work after 2 years. Mm-hmm. That sometimes happens.
Sure.
The old transactional model goes against the grain of neurocentricity because it's like how I, the hiring manager, see the world, see this opportunity, and the talent that I'm bringing in is just an instrument of that. I'm not thinking about what they need from the experience. So I want to fast forward to a new trend that I think is happening, and I see it here in Washington, D.C. So the old model is put out a job spec and then call Central Casting and show me somebody who went to Wharton School and, you know, is a digital marketing professional and has worked in these kinds of companies. And, you know, that's what recruiters do. They find those people and they mm-hmm. send them off to interviews. And if we're lucky, as often is the case, we hire somebody. But here's the new approach, which is not transactional. I'll call it relational. So I saw this first about 6 or 7 years ago with an NGO, a non-governmental organization here in DC. And what they do is they say to the universe, send us interesting people. We don't care what they do. We don't care where they went to school. Send me people that have a sense of purpose and a sense of joie de vivre.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to grow an ecosystem within this organization that creates more of that. That becomes a big family and we're supportive. Great idea. How do you do it? Well, we don't post jobs. We bring people in for coffee and we interview them and we see if we like them. But more importantly, we see if they like us.
Mm.
I said, so how's that working out? She goes, the retention rate is unbelievable. You're working out all the courtship first and you're finding out if...
Right.
It's not just, can you work with me? Can I work with you? It's, can we create something new together? So I want to ask you how you feel about that progression.
Mm. I think it's amazing. I, you know, just listening to you describe that, what comes up for me is, you know, what we're talking about is empathetic recruitment. It is recruiting from the space from which someone is looking for a job. You're looking at you're recruiting them from their lens, and that's what this is all about. I mean, it's when we look at how do we, quite frankly, now that I'm reflecting on this for a second,
mm-hmm.
When I think back at my early days in the Netherlands when I was an expat with AMS, we were extreme in that, you know, we were so desperate for resources that we would joke, and we didn't really mean it, but it's like, if you could fog a mirror, you know, we'd take you on. But really, if you were smart, if you were flexible, positive, nice, we will figure it out. And that's how we grew from 7 people to 750 people in 2 years. And we delivered on time a highly complex project in 4 years. No one thought we could do it. No one. And we had history majors and music majors and some engineers and, you know, political science. It's the gamut of this diversity that created this ability to collectively innovate and solve problems together. And I think that that's what you're describing. When you're talking about a quality conversation, I am imagining a coffee, maybe standing up, nothing between two people. And, you know, what is their purpose? What lights them up? What do they want their contribution to the universe to be? And how does that align to what we're trying to do? How does that align to our mission, to our vision? What's their mission statement for themselves? What's their vision for themselves? What are their personal values? Let's talk about that. Then we'll be able to figure some things out.
When we went through the Great Recession of 2008, something seismic happened in our relationship to work. In the days prior to that, in the years and the eons prior to that, it was definitely transactional. And if you asked a person, at least as I would a recruit, what gets you up out of bed in the morning? What's your motivation? Oftentimes it would be in terms of monetary gain or recognition, which often go hand in hand. You certainly hear that all the time with really good salespeople. If it's not about money, then it's about recognition. But, you know, with salespeople, it's often about money. When we went through the Great Recession, something happened. And part of it was we started to deceive ourselves that things were getting better. And then we learned that a lot of people just sort of fell through the cracks and never got re-energized or re-engaged into the workforce. And why was that? Partly because the money was getting harder to come by. The reach for that upward mobility was not attainable. And that got proved out in some Pew research that came out last year, where the American dream's basically been rebooted to one of economic stability. I'm happy and I am content if I'm covering my monthly expenses and a medical expense, you know, my daughter breaks her arm and I have to pay out of pocket for something, or I have a water leak in the basement and I have to spend money that I don't have to fix it, that I can somehow withstand that. And I think a lot of people have been jogged by that, but it's liberated us to really think about what motivates us. And this is the important point here. More of us are getting back to meaning. What I do, I want to know makes a difference, that it's positive, that it's profound, that I'm having fun doing it, perhaps. And I think this is getting played out in how we relate to work and how we get hired for opportunities. Millennials are very much like this as a cohort. More of them are like meaning-driven people than money-driven people. Mm-hmm. Part of that comes out of the fact that money has eluded them, so they had to find meaning, positive and profound meaning, in other ways. But as a result of that, millennials only want to go to work for companies that reflect their values. So now the market is driving this kind of organizational change as it relates to bringing people on board. And what's the result? Cohesion, thought process improvement, breakthroughs, reinvention. Companies are redefining what they do because of the people they're bringing in. How do you get more companies to do that is the question. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I think that there's much more to it than just millennials. And I think that we've got more baby boomers in the workforce than anything by a long shot. And a lot of these baby boomers have a lot in common with these millennials. Really taking a look at what is my purpose and what is my contribution going to be. That's why I'm here. So I think that it's not just millennials that are addressing this. I think that there's more to it, as there should be. As human beings, we are intrinsically designed to continually develop. We are on this planet, we are in this period of time to become more resilient, better, happier. That's why we're here. We're here to continually develop. And I think that that is more meaningful to people at different stages in their lives. If you're looking at aligning values, organizational values, to purpose or to contribution in meaningful ways, that speaks to how an organization is going to define itself, not only for their staff, but for their clients. There's an incredible trend. I think it's spot on. I think it's more than just millennials. And I think at the end of the day, all of these organizations need to do what is best for them. And so for some organizations, it doesn't make sense to think of themselves with these values that they truly don't hold. And they are transactional, and they are bottom line focused, and it is okay. It is okay. But when we're looking at engagement, when we're looking at validation, you know, you talk about the, you know, validating people. Oprah Winfrey said, you know, recently, at the end of the day, in all of her conversations with really difficult people, bad people, good people, the one common thread that everyone needs in order to go there is that they need to be validated as a human being.
I would agree with that.
So long as we understand the importance of validation, of respect, of being heard, you can be bottom line focused. You can be transactional. You can. But it's this way of how are we interconnecting with each other in a more meaningful way? How am I going to ensure that even though I only care if you show up 8 hours a day and you create X number of widgets or whatever the case may be, yeah, that's fine. And I'm going to validate you as a contributing member of this team and as a human being on this planet. And that's I think, what we're saying. It's you don't have to be, the model doesn't have to be black and white. But I think what we're looking at is the root, what creates this energy of performance, of being a part of, and connection. And I think that's what we're really talking about here.
Our thanks go out to Adrian Schock from 5-to-1 Consulting for walking the tightrope with us. Links to her social media are included in the show notes for this episode. On the tightrope, our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smullen Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you to succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smullen Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmullen.com. Fill out the short form, then click the Subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smullen podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording the Tightrope with Dan Smullen wherever you get your podcasts. And please show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our webpages at dansmullen.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smullen. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.